Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Louis D'Souza, and this is your Daily Dose of Happy. We're so happy you decided to join us today, and we are enjoying and wrestling with new technology and trying things out here. We tried it on Friday with a combination, Louis, of Zoom and StreamYard. That was kind of held together with chewing gum and baling wire, and ultimately the chewing gum fell off and the baling wire fell apart. So we abandoned approach A and tried approach B, and this is where we're just using StreamYard directly, and we're finding we have our own issues going this way too, but at least we're up and running. So that's the good news. Sadly, our friend Amy is going to be able to make it today. She has a last minute family emergency. So, our thoughts and feelings are going out to her, but, that's all right. We'll just, do it the way you and I've been doing it for years now, just the two of us. And we actually have, we have an email to work with today. We got an email. This is a really cool email. And, let me read it to you. This is somebody, I'm actually withholding her name. We're describing her as an Aboriginal woman from Australia. We're going to call her Abby, which is kind of like Aboriginal, so as not to use her real name. And she says, good morning. I hope everyone is well, happy, and healthy. I'm sure you must get so many emails and messages from all over the world every day. So if for some reason my story creeps through the cracks and is shared on your podcast, I would like to kindly ask for my name not to be mentioned. And thank you for saying it at the top. I appreciate that, Abby. A good friend of mine suggested that I listen to some podcasts to help me with my anxiety and depression. She sent me a few screenshots of what she was listening to, but I wasn't feeling it, so I had a little browse for something that would grab my attention, and I came across your show, The Daily Dose of Happiness. I love the title, and there was just something about it that drew me in. So here I am, 2 months later, writing you an email and still loving it, which is great. Fabulous. I had a little laugh this morning on the podcast called A Manifesting Story for the Ages. That was a really cool one, Louis. That was a few weeks ago. You read an email about a lady who thanked you for helping her find her happiness, and she also asked if she could not be mentioned. Unfortunately, it was too late because she'd asked that question at the bottom of her email, so we'd already heard her story. I'm so happy it was read for me to hear, and I loved her gratitude. So in saying all of that, I would also like to thank you and your guests from the bottom of my heart for being in my life. I am a 31-year-old Aboriginal woman from Australia. I come from a little small town of 300 people, and I am the eldest of 8 children. I grew up in a home of alcohol and violence. My mother was an alcoholic who suffered from a lot of mental health issues. It all stemmed from my parents' childhood. My mother's mom was from the stolen generation, and her father died when she was 11. My dad's mom abandoned him at the age of 3, and his father was never in his life. They had no love in their lives, so they didn't know how to love us. Growing up, I had a lot of confusion and anger toward my parents, and some days I wished I was born into a different family. I don't know how or why, but I became the protector for my siblings and my parents at a very young age. My mission was to help them get better and change this dysfunctional cycle which was passed down through the generations. I went to boarding school and then scored a scholarship at university. Unfortunately, I didn't finish my degree because I made the choice to go home to work, provide, and protect my siblings because they would have been split up into different foster homes. Mining became my next option, and I've been in this industry for the last 10 years. I've always had a drive and tried to look at life positively. I wanted to be successful, happy, and just simply enjoy life. I seemed okay on the outside, but deep within me, I had all this pain and trauma. I lost faith in God and myself because everything that I would do to help my family would not change the situation we were in. I worked my ass off and paid for my younger siblings' schooling. I paid counseling and doctors for my mom, but it would all come back to square one. I felt let down and thought, why me? I am such a good-hearted person, and I have put my life on hold for my family. Why can't something good come my way? I suffered silently with depression, anxiety, and I've been suicidal a number of times. In June 2020, my mother had finally passed away because of her alcohol abuse. My heart broke into a million pieces because I tried my whole life to help her get better. That was my goal, but because I felt like I had failed her, I had a mental breakdown. I wanted to commit suicide to be with her because, but I knew I couldn't because I had an older brother who was brain damaged and 6 other younger siblings, and my dad's still here on earth. When everything had slowed down after my mom's passing, I gathered my strength to go back to work. I had a moment in silence and reflected on her life. I cried and cried and cried because in that moment I felt her pain and I felt that that was the moment I had my awakening experience. This was the moment that pushed me even harder to stop all of this pain and to try to find something different that will heal me or that will help me heal. Everything was always there right in front of me. I just didn't see it. Your show has changed my life. I'm still in debt. I am still helping my family get through life. And there are a lot of obstacles that I still haven't conquered. But you know what? I'm okay. For the first time in my life, I feel an inner peace and happiness within me. I have let go of all the pain, accepted the past, and I want to enjoy the rest of my years here on Earth. I now look at the positives more than the negatives. One positive story out of all of this is that even though my mother didn't know how to show her children love, I gave it to her. I gave it to my siblings. Mom would sit there awkward and not know how to respond, but I was persistent. I just kept telling her I loved her and gave her cuddles. And on our last Christmas together before my mom passed away, she surprised me by asking me if she could give me a hug, if she could have a hug, and told me she loved me. No money in the world could have taken that beautiful moment away from me. Today is the day I start my diploma in social services. I was born to help better people's lives, and I'm super excited to be studying this area. I have this amazing feeling that life is going to be wonderful for me. Sending the biggest cuddles and love to you all, Abby. How about that?
Amazing. Wow.
Yeah. That's one of those letters you get and it just humbles you.
Absolutely. I don't really know what to say.
Yeah. Just, I mean, first of all, congratulations on the progress, right? I mean, oh.
Absolutely.
Yeah, to come through all that and to have reached a point where she's feeling okay with herself, that is, this is a time, you're going to give, giving the love to everybody else. This is the time to give yourself the love, to give yourself that pat on the back. Cause, oh my goodness, you so deserve it for making that shift. That's a shift that so many people have trouble making. We've talked about that, Louis. I mean, how many times have we talked about what does it take to make the shift when you're having trouble, right? And here she does, she just does it by listening to the show. It's like, whoa, really cool. Really, really cool. And I appreciate the fact that the show helped, but we're not going to take all the credit. We're not going to take much of the credit at all. You're the one who did it. You're the one who did it, Abby. You made the shift.
As a friend of mine has often said to me and others, when a circumstance like this happens, they say the sentence "well earned" or the two words.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well earned. Yeah. Because that's what it is. I mean, we can talk until the cows come home, but unless somebody practices it and puts it into their life and actually implements it, right. It's not theirs. It's still ours.
It's true.
So, I mean, really well earned, because it takes the shift within yourself to be able to get to that place, to be able to do mm-hmm. that, to get there. And, watching and listening and seeing these transformational stories is the highlight of my life. Absolutely. You know, Watching somebody grab a concept that I've shared, implement it and run with it is so fulfilling. It's unbelievable. Not that I need them to fulfill me in any way, but it's like the cherry on the top of the cake, you know, it's just
right. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. And, it's not like you really need it, but boy, you really like it when you get it. Even if it's not something you were expecting, but you needed.
and one thing, Amy, not Amy, what did you call her?
Abby. We're calling her Abby. Yeah, even though that's not her name. I figure Abby, Aboriginal, is kind of close, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So Abby, one of the things that is going to be very powerful for her is the contrast.
Mm.
So you've got huge contrast on the one side. And then you've got the change of it, and then you've got the other side. So, you know, it's going to be strong. It's going mm-hmm. to be really strong. It's going to be massive relief and release. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people do this transition. I mean, a lot of people have labeled people, haven't they? You know the story, Walt. You know, this person's always going to be like that. They're never going to change.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, you know, that's all about what I wanted to talk about this week was responsibility. What do they say? When you take responsibility, you get more?
This is true.
No, you get more what? What do you get more?
Well, among other things, you get more responsibility.
You have a law of attraction. But when you take more responsibility, you get more freedom. Isn't that a fairly
Oh, I think that's true, yeah. Especially when you're taking responsibility for yourself.
My daughter gets more responsible, then she gets the key to the house, you know.
Yeah, right.
And that gives her more freedom to come and go more as she wants, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, Abby's story is very much about taking responsibility for who and what she is. Because you can't always control your environment. You can almost very rarely have much control over your environment. Your environment throws you curveballs and this and that. But what you can have 100% control of is how you respond to it. And that's your ability to respond that gives you your inner freedom, that gives you that blossoming and that opening of who you really are, and gives you the ability to start loving and the ability to have more peace and expression, and, you know, not labeling and boxing anybody anymore, because that is the biggest problem us humans have got is, you know, if you've labeled the entire world, Walt, what is left?
The next world? I give up. Tell me.
Exactly. Go kill yourself because there's nothing left. Right. But if you say anything can happen to anybody, anytime, anywhere, and you open it up and you look at there's so much you don't know, and you look at it from that perspective, it's hugely liberating, and you wake up every morning like excited. What can I do? Where can I go? What's going to happen today? You know, because everything is unknown because you haven't labeled it. Oh, my daughter's going to react the same way again today. Oh, my wife's going to react the same way again today. You know, and you put everybody in these little boxes. And of course, people will, as Abram says, they will tend to rise to expectations. So, you know, when my wife gets to that point where she's really annoyed with me about something, then I just come to her and I give it to her quickly and lots of it. And it's just like, okay, I'm going to rise to your expectations. And, when I mention things like that, she's like, really gets frustrated because,
yes,
you know, people want to change you. Mm-hmm. But, of course, I'm one of those ones who are really saying, sorry, it's not your job, it's mine. So Abby's really, really gone through a lot of changes, and I really admire that. There are individuals in the world who I have noticed, quite a few in my life, but they have drawn really big, complicated scenarios into their lives. It's like you have no idea.
No kidding.
And, you know, there is a saying in a book I read many, many, many years ago. It's an old Tibetan type book, and it was saying that, you know, the strong souls are given a little more to deal with when they come down here.
Yeah.
And they get a little more of the curveballs. They get a few more of the curveballs because they can handle them. They can deal with them better. My admiration really goes out because the transformation in that scenario and that situation and the way it was painted is there's some really colorful paint strokes going on there, going in all different directions. And, you know, when a child is born, it's innocent, isn't it?
That's the general presumption. It's also complete and full creator. So I now kind of hesitate when I get that question, but I used to would say yes automatically, if that helps.
I love it when you're agreeable. So I remember when my second daughter was born, it was very starkly visible. Actually, my first one as well, to quite a degree. Is I got the very, very distinct and impression that this was a clean canvas and that anything can be written on it. Mm. And, you know, I was chatting to my daughter the other day and I was saying, you know, My job is to give you a little bit of food, a roof over your head, and then to get out of your way.
Yeah. Which is not easy to do, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there's millions of movies of the opposite.
The opposite, that's right. That's true.
Of the juxtaposed position. You know, I was watching a movie, and I recommend it to you because I know that recommending a movie or TV series to you is very difficult. So
this is true. Yeah,
I recommend this one to you.
I'm a tough one. I'm a tough sell.
It's called Anne of Green Gable.
Well, I know the storyline. Sure.
Yeah. And they've made an exceptionally good TV program out of it, and it's on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
There's 3 seasons, 10 episodes each. And, you know, it's based in Nova Scotia. If anybody doesn't know where Nova Scotia is, it's an island off the top right, off the bottom right of Canada and the top right of America, which is the main, the state main. So there's it's not a small island. It's quite a big one.
No, it's pretty good size.
And, a little girl who's an orphan, lands up with a brother and sister couple on a farm in the middle of nowhere. And, they wanted a boy, so they wanted to send her back. And then she ran away. And then there's so much trauma and all the things that go on with all this. But it is just acted so beautifully in this. Mm. You know, even in the first episode, you feel LOA just drifting through it because she has so much creativity, so much passion for life. And it just oozes out of every pore of her. And, you know, what I was trying to bring out, the idea is you've got the child who's a blank slate to a large degree. I mean, they chose you as a family, so they're going to pick up all that stuff. But you've got this blank slate, but then when you get older, you've got all the stuff, that goes on in you. But then if you can get to that pure place again, the mature, pure place, that place where you can still exude the kind of love that Abby is pointing out there, you know, that kind of absolute, I've got to the stage now, no matter how bad the situations are outside, that I'm still able to love and be that alignment with myself and with my source. And it's beautiful. You know, I really love that. So that's the kind of scenario I was trying to point out is, you know, you can really appreciate that pure positive energy that a new baby comes in with. And then when you can still exude source energy when you are older and you've gone through all the stuff in life and you can still be there, that is something I respect massively.
That's a great storyline too. I'd forgotten about that one. That was a series of books, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, she wrote quite a few books. I had to look it all up, but she wrote it in the 1900s, and it was very forward-thinking for that era. I mean, my gosh. I'm sure the readership was very small in those days. Because the topics are gays.
So just a little challenging, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Black rights, Indian rights, and all the rest of it. And, you know, it's now sold over 50 million copies, which translated into something like 32 languages, which is amazing. Incredible.
It is, yeah.
And it's so apt for today's world, you know.
Sure.
And there's so much simplicity about it. You know, they don't have computers and this and that, and they just had this little lodge which they created in the middle of the forest, and they came there and they read poetry and they made stories and they imagined scenarios and they sang songs, and you know, it was just such simplicity to the whole thing, which is so beautiful. And
but the thing's so universal,
each other and the kind of problems they had.
Yeah, I mean, those are very universal themes that they're playing, and they are themes that are still playing out today. So of course, it's very relevant for today.
Very relevant.
Like you said, it's cool. I hadn't thought about that as being a law of attraction series of books, but you're right. There really was quite an element to that, wasn't there?
Mm.
I mean, you're kind of making me want to go listen to the Netflix series just so I could revisit it. It's been a long time since I read those books. It's like, I should revisit.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the main actress as well. I mean, you've got this skinny little freckled girl with skewed teeth and all the rest of it. And she just does such a brilliant role, and how she overcomes conflict after conflict after conflict.
Right. Sort of like our friend Abby. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I was relating it, because, you know, I do feel there's a correlation there. The depth and breadth to which this child went through, and, you know, obviously it's just a story. It's not based on fact, although.
Right.
The location is based a bit on the author's birth area, et cetera.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, that ability to turn that corner and to look at things with that positivity and that creativity, you know, really using that creative faculty to a high degree of getting what you want, going out there. It doesn't matter what everybody else says or does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, using what the law of attraction we always talk about is that focus and clarity of what you want. Spending time sitting in your room and just visualizing what you want and just having so much fun with it and playing with it. I mean, you can see it so much in this girl and the way she acts and everything. You can just feel that level of creativity oozing out of her. And you know, they talk about, you know, dream world versus reality for her and how she uses her creativity in an imaginary way to create her reality. And, you know, and she uses this incredible ability of hers to just move forward in life. And it's just great. I love it. It's, you know, anybody out there who's watching the podcast, go watch it if you got Netflix.
Or pick up the books if you don't. I mean, the books are well worth reading, and you're going to pick up the same storyline. But I'm curious to see the Netflix series just to see how they handled it, because it sounds pretty good the way you're describing it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if other people are going to see what I see in it, but I haven't been impressed with the TV series as much as this one for a while. So yeah.
I will tell you this. Like you said, I'm not easy to please when it comes to making recommendations about movies and TV, as you know very, very well. I mean, poor Alex King has tried dozens of times, and I think she's pulling her hair out because I keep ruining her percentages. But, yeah, I mean, I'm a tough sell. And yet the moment that you said it was about the Anne of Green Gables books, you basically raised my interest level just by saying that part. So I'm curious. I'm going to check it out. I'm going to find out what that series looks like. See how well it matches up to the books, and see how well, I mean, from what you're describing, it sounds really cool. It sounds like they really captured the spirit of it from the LOA perspective.
What I really like is they've obviously taken a few years to create the series. So series one, she was younger. Series two, she was older. And series three, she almost looking like a young woman. And, you know, and they've just done it beautifully. You know, because she's obviously aged and matured along the way, and obviously they've used makeup and, you know, special effects to age her a bit there, but they've done it very well. You have to be impressed. Incredible story. How things can be misinterpreted so many times is really one of the themes.
Oh, yes.
That rings through that, and it rings through all of our lives, isn't it? How we jump to conclusions so often. And it
I just wanted to interject. One of the cool things about using the StreamYard is not only are we able to stream it to multiple locations, but it combines all of the chats from the various locations into one chat. So we can see it right in front of us, which is really, really cool. I just wanted to note something. Josie hadn't checked in for a while, but she's checking in today. and there's Jeffrey checking in too. And she says, lately I've been reading more children and middle grade books, and I feel like I'm aligning with my inner child again. So that's appropriate for what you're talking about, because that's the age range that particular series was aimed at. And I like that idea a lot.
I don't see that as a children's book. I remember my wife said, you know, I've got into books recently. Let me have a look at this series. And she went and she said, look, but that's really, really kids' picture on the front. You know, is this a kid's book or what? No, actually, I think anybody can pretty much read this book.
Well, although, I mean, anybody can read Harry Potter too. I mean, but it's
teenager
onwards. Targeted. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's definitely aimed at teenagers. No doubt about that. Mm. But yeah, I hadn't really thought of it as being advanced for teenagers. And I guess it probably was, like you said, they had probably a pretty small readership in the beginning because the topics were pretty darn controversial. But yeah. Yeah, that, I love that. I love the Harry Potter books. I like a lot of children's literature that's the more challenging literature. You know, the stuff that makes you think, the stuff that any adult can just start reading it and you say to yourself, well, this is more than just a kid's book. This is an adult book too. I love those kinds of books that are aimed at teens. I've loved them from going back to that era when she was publishing, back to the era of Mark Twain. Or of Beatrix Potter or any of those authors from that time period who were ostensibly writing either for kids or for young adults, but their stuff has stood the test of time. And I love that fact. Amazing too, how many of them involved imagination. You mentioned imagination as part of Anne growing up. As soon as you were describing that and saying it was, you know, turn of the 20th century, I'm thinking, well, Mark Twain was writing about similar issues in the guise of Huck Finn around the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the same kind of a feeling. You know, you feel like you were growing up with Huck Finn. Same deal. Yeah. Oh, Jeffrey's also checking in.
I was listening to a reporter just now, absolutely slamming another book, a very famous book. I can't remember which one now, has now been banned because of racial, sexual, whatever it is. You know, and how many books are racial and sexual currently that are not banned?
Yeah,
that are coming out every day.
Yeah, right.
And then he was saying, you know, Google had to remove the egg out of its salad icon because of it would offend the vegan and the vegetarian, not the vegetarian, the vegan. Oh, and it's like, what is the world coming to? And he's just absolutely going ballistic. And I really felt for where he was coming from because it's just gone overboard. This endless dissection, instead of seeing the whole and the unity and everything, everybody just cutting everything up into pieces.
We have an interesting, sub-theme that's been going on for a few weeks now, particularly with Dan and Alex on the Thursday show, because Dan finds himself inundated with people trying to aggressively turn him into a vegan, and he's not interested in being a vegan. He actually tried it at one point, and he got sick because he found that, I guess he did some genetic testing and found that he really needed to be a meat eater. He couldn't survive without the meat, and yet they won't stop coming after him. So there's an example of how it can go the other way too. You can get people who become activists about various kinds of things. But here you are bringing up the vegan thing again. I'm thinking, oh my God, this is the vegan show.
I've had a new understanding about vegan and meat eater, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a point of view I've never really looked at before. And I'll throw it out and see what you think of it. So, everything's vibration. We understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're looking to what's best for us, we go at how we feel, yeah?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So, if we feel that this food is good for us, and it's something I'm learning to have greater and greater and greater sensitivity to. I always had a bit of a sensitivity to it, but before I eat my food, I generally put my hand near it or I touch my food, etc. And I feel, I look inside and I say, is this good for me? Mm-hmm. Is this right for me? And if I have any hesitation, I tend just not to eat it. I'll eat around it or eat something else or whatever. And I'm learning more and more and more to trust that. And based on that, it's where I would say anybody should go, not based on it's good or bad for society, or it's good or bad for the animals, good or bad for anything. Is it good for you at that moment in time to eat that? And it's where I'm very much leaning to because, you know, I just feel that is really the way that is. Well, if it's good for my body and if I'm in a happy place, I can help more people. And, you know, I just think it's heading all in the right direction. So I'm very pro that at the moment.
Good. I like the approach. Basically, it's very similar to something that a friend of mine from many, many years ago, advocated. He actually kind of went a little bit off the deep end and went, I guess today we would call it going off the grid. The phrase didn't exist at the time. This was, circa 1985, something like that. So quite a few years ago. But he basically went off the grid and he developed a completely different eating style for himself. Not totally vegan. I'm not sure how I don't think it fits any of the modern isms in terms of, you know, the different, food styles, but it was his own, like, for instance, he would only eat certain kinds of raw meat in very, very tiny amounts. And I'd never quite understood the philosophy behind that one, but there was a thought pattern apparently. And what was really interesting about it is I didn't hear a lot about him after he went off the grid, so to speak. But when I did pick up little bits and pieces from it, I found that he was in a much happier place than where he'd been before. He actually was originally from, your homeland. He was originally from South Africa and moved to the States and when he made this move into the off the grid status, he went to the southwestern part of the United States and I lost track of him after that. But up until that point, he had been really very much into a lot of the same kind of stuff I was into, which was pretty darn negative, very politically oriented. And after he made his shift, I didn't know anything about vibration or law of attraction or anything like that at that time, but I could just tell there was a shift that had gone on in him, and it was a shift for the better. One that I can appreciate a lot more now, than I could then because I've made my own shift since then. But I just find it fascinating that here you are talking about, how you have shifted in one of your many ways toward a different philosophy about food based purely on what do I feel like or what does my body feel like or what am I getting that I need right now? And, as in contrast to, well, here's what I should be eating. Here's what the world says I should be eating. Oh dear, we lost Louis. Hopefully he'll be back in a moment. Hopefully it's just a reconnection issue. For those of you who are just tuning in, we're experimenting with a new platform. Instead of going with Zoom, we're experimenting with StreamYard. Oh, here he comes. We're experimenting with StreamYard because, first of all, our friend, David Strickle had recommended it. And then also, WG, who does the Friday show with me, is also an advocate of StreamYard. So I started playing with it. And the reason that I like it so much is that it enables us to stream to multiple locations. Right now, for this show, we're streaming to three different locations. And I'm actually going to upgrade, I think, once I'm convinced that this is actually a reliable platform. Still, that's still to be determined, but it's looking fairly good. But once I know that it's a reliable platform, there's an extra plan you can go to where you can actually stream to eight different locations or up to eight different locations. And I like that because it's a way to reach different people, different audiences and so forth. So, we're trying to take steps to grow the podcast. And, you know, obviously we want to keep adding listeners. We're happy with what we have. We've got, we're averaging a good almost 700 listeners now per episode. But I want to keep growing it. I mean, I'll tell you, honestly, my goal for the longest time has been to get up into the tens of thousands of listeners. So we're inching closer and closer, and that's a good thing. But this is just one of the way to get us there. Now, Louis is trying desperately to connect in. I can see there's a little icon that shows up on my screen showing that he's trying to connect, and he starts to connect, and then it fails, and starts to connect and fails. So he's running into some kind of a technical issue. I'm not sure what that is. So I'll just try to carry things for a little bit here. Actually, I should also check to make sure he's not sending me a message. No, he's not. Okay. Hey, it's good to see everybody who's logging in. If you guys have any news to share, you know, feel free to drop it into the chat because it's a unified chat. All the different locations that we are streaming to, the chats all get combined. That was one of the things that I really liked about StreamYard when I first started to explore it. So we're getting it from a variety of different locations, which is really great. But what's Brenda posted? Dr. Seuss books. Well, yeah, sure. Dr. Seuss books. That goes back to what we were talking about a few moments ago about children's books. Dr. Seuss books actually have been a focus of controversy lately too. I guess there were a bunch of them that had some fairly racist themes in them. So they've been kind of dropped. But you know, if you love the Dr. Seuss books, I was not really a big fan of Dr. Seuss when I was growing up, but if you're a Dr. Seuss fan, sure, that's another way to reconnect to childhood and to what it's like to feel your inner child. So sure. Almost anything that was, you know, important to us as a child is something that we can easily connect to. There was a movie that came out. When did it come out? I'm going to say within the last 10 years. And I believe it was called Finding Neverland. It was the story of the author of the Peter Pan play, the original play. And there were some books that followed up with it too. But it was a story about the author and about the child who was the inspiration for Peter Pan. A very endearing movie and had a sad theme to it because it also included the death of the child's mother. And so it was pretty intense. And kind of another example of what Louis was referring to about, not really sure if it's a child's movie. It doesn't quite fit that category because it has some advanced themes in it. But I found it to be really, really very, very good. And there's just another example of an author who dates from the same time period as these other people we talked about, the author of Anne of Green Gables. You know, we mentioned Mark Twain, Beatrix Potter. I mean, there's a whole bunch of authors who were kind of setting new paths, new standards back in the early 1900s and in the turn of the century. Here comes Louis. He's back again. Yeah, we hear you. We thought we lost you for good.
We're streaming out something else. Yeah.
we'll chat about that afterwards so I can report problems to them. But I was just sharing some thoughts about other children's literature and about, I was also explaining what we're trying to do with StreamYard here for people who had tuned in a little bit later on. So we've caught them up a bit. But let's get back to the topic you had brought up. You brought up the idea of responsibility, and I made a note in my notes to make that a topic for this week. You mentioned how, I'm not sure how you said it. The way I was taking it was responsibility is really about self-response, how we respond to the situations of life that get kicked our way. Because like you pointed out, we don't necessarily control what comes to us in our environments. We actually do have some control in the sense that through the law of attraction, we can attract the kinds of environments that we want to have. But individual events are going to happen. And when they do, we get the opportunity to decide how we're going to respond. And this is a very poignant topic as far as I'm concerned for me, because I've had a few challenges, not nearly on an Abby scale, but I've had a few challenges of my own the last few days about just, you know, how am I going to respond to some things that I didn't like so much? There are a couple of times where...
And how are you going to respond to them, Walt?
I could have done better, to be honest. I'm still learning. I'm still working on it. But the good news is that the various practices that I've been doing daily, you know, my morning exercises and so forth, have stood me in good stead. So what would have perhaps kept me in a bad place for perhaps days or even weeks at a time, I was able to shake off in a matter of hours, maybe a day. So that's the good news. I figure progress is progress no matter how you look at it. But
yeah, it's a very good yardstick. How quickly can you go from not wanted to wanted?
Yes.
You know?
Now, some people are stock car collectors. They want to know how fast can they go to 0 to 60. You want to know how fast can you go from not wanted to wanted. That, I mean.
Talking about that, it was fascinating that, you know, drag racing.
I know what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you've got a car and you go a certain distance and you just go, wow. You see the fastest car wins. That's it.
Right.
But they say that the new Tesla that's coming out is going to be faster than any of these huge, powerful,
I've heard that,
amazing cars.
Yeah.
Than anything else. And, you know, it blows me away what these electric cars are going to be doing in the future. Just, you know,
yes.
I was looking at it. It's very cheap to fill up your car with electricity versus filling up with any other fuel. Of course, there's 65 or 70% tax in the UK on fuel. And they say that they're going to have to find the tax somewhere else once everything is converted to electricity in the UK.
But so that makes sense. That makes more sense to me now, because when you said that, I thought about it. I said, wait a minute, that's not what I heard. And then I realized we don't have the same level of fuel tax that you have. So that explains.
No, you don't. No, it's very high in the UK. It's actually, I think it's higher than I've said. But we don't put gas in our car. We put petroleum in our car.
That's right.
we don't lie to the public.
I don't know if that would make me feel better
about putting gas in the car. Like, where's the gas? Isn't it supposed to be air-based gas? Isn't that?
I always felt a little bit strange. Anyway, whenever I felt that I had some gastric gas, I was thinking, oh my God, what do I have in my belly here? This is terrible. And then I realized, it's not the same substance.
Yeah, Americans make me laugh, I must admit.
I'm an American. I make me laugh, so why not?
Yeah. So these little scooter things, these things the kids have, these little two wheel things with the flat board and the little stick and the handles. Yeah.
Oh yeah, right.
Scooter. Now you've got these electric scooters, and they are becoming absolutely rife in the UK. And I see a huge potential for them. Absolutely massive. And I can really see them taking off.
Well, there was also another product that came out, and I can't think what they call it. It was like a people mover or something like that. It was a platform that you stood on and you leaned forward and it would move forward. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember the details about it, but it sounds similar to that in a sense. I mean, you don't actually touch the ground with that, I don't think, but.
Well, I saw this guy. He was on a single wheel. Wheel was about size.
Right.
A single wheel, and it's got two little bars on the side, and he just stands on those, and off he goes, and it's like really works well. He was going all over the place with this thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, I can see them taking off too, because they're even smaller than the scooters, and, and of course you got this automatic balancing of it, so you don't really fall over or anything. So, the thing is getting them on trains and getting them on public transport.
And
the smaller they are, the better they are. So, you know, I'm just seeing that the future is going to be really interesting. There's going to be a huge amount of us using these things in far more often, as they become more evolved and powerful. And, you know, most of them can go about 25 to 30 miles an hour. And I mean, that's fast for a little scooter, hey?
Sure.
You got no helmet, nothing. You're just zooting down the road.
They've
got brakes now. They've got disc brakes. They've got brake lights. You know, they've got everything now. They've really zooped them up, and, you know, they can go over rough terrain. They've got bigger type wheels, some of them, and, they've got suspension front and back. You know, it's like really they've gone to town with these things now. They're so powerful. You can take them out like those BMXs in our days, you know. Now that's you take one of these out and you zoot around with it and spin around the dirt in it and all the rest of it and perform tricks on them. Yeah.
I was just going to ask, are the people who do tricks?
Of course.
Of course.
You can now use it as a skateboard, you know, when you slide down these bars and all the rest of it. You can use it for that, and you can use it to, jump up and do twirls and things like that on some of these nice bends. But I'm really feeling that electricity-powered vehicles in all different shapes and sizes is going to become a huge part of our future.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt whatsoever.
Absolutely, no doubt. But it's really becoming clear at the moment with a lot of clarity. If you want to invest in something, that's probably a good place to go to.
That makes sense. It does make sense. I want to get back to the topic of responsibility, though, because I think that's a really good one. And you mentioned it, and I kind of tried to expand on it. But
can elaborate more.
Yeah, tell me more what you had in mind with that, or tell us more what you had in mind on that.
So if you've made a judgment about everybody, you've made a judgment of how everybody's going to respond, you're not in a place of being consciously able to look at anything anymore. Now you're looking at it through a filter, through a color. You've already colored that one blue, that one green, that one red, and you can't see an object for what it is. You can't see a situation for what it is. You can't see a person for what it is, because you're looking through all these glasses of what you expect, what you know about them, what you feel about them, what you think they're going to be like tomorrow, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, you've got all these colored glasses in front of you, and you've got this, and you're not able to respond. Now, being able to respond by just seeing what's there is a spiritual endeavor. It's ability to be detached and just see is and respond appropriately to what's happening. So, you know, a monkey scratching, you know, under his arm is an automatic reaction, a conditioned reaction. And when man learns not to be conditionally reacting to things, that is when you are really starting to become enlightened, because you're now able to just look, you know, they're being angry with me. They're being angry with me. That's it. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're being nice to me. They're being nice to me. That's it. You know, there's, and you're able to deal with it all. You know, if a loved one dies, this is an interesting thing. If a loved one dies, it traumatizes you and all the rest of it, but that's because your world has been limited to only a few people. If you expanded out a bit more to your town and you started being able to respond beautifully or better to everybody's death in the town, you know, then you've got a more balanced look. But if you go bigger than that, you go your country. And if you have the compassion or the ability to respond to everybody's death without falling over and cracking up and wailing and all the rest of it, then, you know, so what it is you're learning to be able to respond to the concept, which, you know, a more spiritual person is one who's looking to look at the oneness of everything. A person who's still beginning and not so advanced. I don't like using any of these words, but they're more picky and they're more splitty and they're not breaking up everything. And they've got the this and the that and this party and that party. And you've got the different color skins and you've got all the isms or, you know, you got all the issues where you've broken everything down little parts.
Right. Yep.
So when you've got that ability to respond to all things, then that is a hugely mature and spiritual and an awakened concept. So,
and I love the way that David Strickle and the Stream of David used to describe that. They would describe it as viewing things very similar to the way that non-physical sources, we refer to them, view things. Viewing it from a faraway view, like a 10,000 foot view, rather than an up close view. Because when you view it from further away, it's just easier to kind of mentally, I don't like the word detached. They used to say detached, but I'm not sure that it's really detachment. I think it's more like turning the volume down on emotional response and not having the emotion overwhelm you because when you're that far away, it's like, oh yeah, I can see this thing's happening and just not affecting me very much. Whereas when you're right in front of it, it can really just kind of hit you in the face with how much of
a bit of
an
emotional contradiction in terms in my mind, because the ability to respond means you're fully involved with it.
Yeah, there's truth to that.
But it's not cracking you up at the same time.
Right, yeah. Which is similar. That goes back to what Abby was talking about in her email to us. Because she's right in the middle of all this craziness that's been going on in her life. And what you're talking about is directly, the tongue isn't working today. It's directly related to this because she is having to respond right there in the field, so to speak, in the moment, time after time after time after time, to one challenging experience after another. And you're right, that's where the word responsibility takes on an entirely new meaning. The technique that the stream teaches is a technique for basically desensitizing ourselves to, you know, being overwhelmed by all that kind of stuff. But the kind of responsibility you're talking about, that's the responsibility that you learn by basically going to the mental gym, by doing the working out and building yourself up to the point where you say, I'm not feeling that angst anymore. Like Abby, I've just kind of left that behind. It's not, it used to drive me crazy and it doesn't drive me crazy anymore. And now I'm actually finding ways to embrace my new possibilities. And what'd she say she was doing? She was going back to school for social worker type stuff. I can't remember exactly what it was, but she's in the midst of all the chaos and crisis. She's found a way to refocus her attention and get excited within that life. That's what's so impressive about what she's doing.
That's what I was saying. You know, the difference between the childlike open and spontaneity versus the adult's version of that, which I really have that so much admiration for. But, you know, I had in the previous week, I went to a funeral of one of my good friends who died of the coronavirus. And, you know, as much as I was feeling so much for her and all the rest of it, I just got there speaking practically to her husband, you know, really had a good chat with her in my mind when I went up to the coffin, et cetera, you know, cause she is just such a loving, giving person. And, you know, I watched her grow and expand through all the years I was with her. And, it was just beautiful. And I wasn't traumatized like I might have been or have been in the past for different deaths that I've, you know, funerals and things like that I've been to. I was really centered and balanced, and I was keeping my balance and allowing it to flow to anybody else who was around there. And it was just such a beautiful service and, you know, simple, down to earth, very, very, very nice. And, you know, that's the thing, you know, I was just learning how can I respond practically, simply, and in the best way that I can. And, you know, it was quite an eye opener for me to go through the whole experience of all that in a different way than I used to do it. So it was just interesting.
It reminds me of an experience that we had, Louise and I, about, I guess it would be a little over 3 years ago, three or four. I think it's 3 years ago. Her brother-in-law died, her sister's husband, and we went to the funeral, and we've not spent lots of time with her sister or with her niece and nephew, but we spent some time with them. And while we were there, now this was a traditional Italian funeral. So this is like a wake that goes on and on and on. I mean, it was very long, very involved. And Louise and her sister have a history of, basically, they've had a very challenging relationship over the years. That's probably the best way to describe it. And Louise was able to put all that aside and see her sister up front in the funeral parlor, dealing with this long, long line of people coming through to express their condolences and so forth. And, you know, all the family, you know, the mother, the son, the daughter, all three of them were just standing for hours and hours at a time. And Louise just kind of asked herself, what can I do to help her out? And realized they need water. They need food. They need to sit sometimes. They need to find a way to just, so she just started taking care of them, which was an entirely new response for Louise. And it was an entirely new experience for her sister in particular. And, her sister Lee she's a pretty forthright person. She'll tell you straight out what she's thinking. And she was just blown away that her sister was taking care of her. She's, I can't believe my sister's taking care of me. She was almost smiling in the midst of her grief. She was almost smiling over these little acts of service that my wife was doing for her. And you could tell it was taking the stress off. It was just taking that edge off in a very, very trying circumstance. So not quite the same as your story, but a similar circumstance.
You know, knowing my friend Monica who died, well, there was no ways I was going to go in black to the funeral. So I'm going bright, colorful colors. And I was the only person.
The only one.
And I was thinking, I'm not going to do anything else than what Monica would have really wanted, I think, or at least what I perceive she would have wanted. I'm not here to impress the other people that are going to the funeral. I'm here to, I'm not here for Monica. So yeah, it was an interesting experience from that point of view. Not that it it stuck in my mind much, or I thought about it much. It was just interesting. I kind of observed it. Oh, okay. They still wear black these days.
Oh,
kind
yeah.
Of my mind.
I had a kind of a challenging experience going to that particular funeral for my brother-in-law that I mentioned, because, I mean, I knew black was the thing you wore, and so I did wear black, but I also wanted to wear something to kind of offset it. And I'm trying to remember what I read, not read, what I wore. It was, the reason I said the word red is I wore something that had red in it, and I can't remember what it was, but it was something to just kind of, you know, throw some color in the midst of all the blackness that was there. And I never did ask anybody what they felt about it. I don't think I even wanted to know, to be perfectly honest, what other people were going to say about it. But, yeah, it was kind of my own little way to, I wouldn't say I wanted to make a statement, but just kind of throw something out there to just kind of break the mood a little bit. I also want to share something else that happened too. Cause after all of that, I mean, it was a 2-day affair. After when the wake was over, basically it was dinner and then go to sleep. And then the next morning was the funeral, and we went to the funeral, went to the cemetery, did all that stuff. And then they had a sort of a closer family, extended family, but you know, some friends, mostly just extended family get together. And of course, this is Italian. So, you know, there's loads of food all over the place. And, you know, just, it's just this massive feast going on. And Lee is just sitting there at a table, and everybody's pretty much ignoring her, which I thought was kind of odd. Louise and I both thought it was kind of odd. So we went over to sit with her, and she was just sitting there and dealing with the shock of what was going on. And I just got the sense that she needed to talk, to get stuff out. And so I thought the only thing I could think of to say to her to help get the thing going, it was my way of being responsible on the way you're talking about it, you know, finding how am I going to respond to the situation. I said to her, and this is true, by the way, I said, you know, Lee, I barely knew your husband. I mean, he came to our wedding, and he actually was sort of the MC at our wedding. And we visited him one time at their home, and I got a quick conversation with him over dinner. I never got to know the guy. For whatever reason, it just had never played out that I never had sat down and had a heart-to-heart with him. I just never really got to know him. So I said, Leah, I mean, I know this sounds strange. I never really got to know Joe. What was it about Joe that you loved so much? And that question opened the floodgates. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden she smiled and she started telling me about how they met and how he made her laugh. And it was all that she was bringing up at that point was the happy memories. She wasn't bringing up the fact that he'd been through the illness and all of that other stuff. She was going through the happy memories, especially the early memories. And it just changed her entire demeanor. I mean, Louis, it was almost like within a five minute period of time, she became a different person. I mean, obviously she didn't, but I'm trying to express the degree of shift that she went through in those 5 minutes. Yeah. That transformation.
From unwanted to wanted, yeah.
From one question. And I was still blown away. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, wow, I must be a good coach or something to ask one question and get all that to come out. Cause it was not really what I was intending, but oh my goodness, it really worked. But if you're going to, I guess I'm going to speak for myself. If I'm going to try to be responsible, I want to try to be responsible in a way that I can, you know, evoke that kind of response from somebody else who needs a little help, a little support. If I can do that more often, boy, my life's worthwhile just from that.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Responsibility, of course, applies in areas of life beyond, you know, end of life. It applies in all areas. I'm thinking about the stuff that Abby has gone through. I'm thinking about the fact that she's now going back to school at age 31. I guess it's going to be as a social worker. That's the certificate or diploma that she's going after. And she's doing it with tremendous enthusiasm because in her words, she feels like she has a purpose in life to be helpful to others, to assist others. She's expressing that she has found her passion in life, a passion that she had all along, but now she's focusing it. And I keep thinking to myself, and I was thinking this when I first read her email, wow, she's setting herself up for some massive, massive, wonderful change to happen. And she's already, look at the change she's already made, but I mean, it's going to be fun to find out what the next round is for her, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's going to be really
cool.
Yeah, I hope
she keeps in contact. That'll be good.
Yeah. So, you know, please do contact us some more and let us know what happens, Abby, as time goes on. And we want to encourage other people to use the LOA Today app as well to send your comments and questions and share what's going on with you too. We really appreciate that. But in the meantime, that's it.
Yeah, I just wanted to say quickly, hello to Jeff and Brenda and Joseph.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice to hear from you guys. Glad you're back.
Thanks for, that's the one part of StreamYard that's working well. It's consolidating the comments from the various sources. And so that's really, really good. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much, guys.
Brilliant.
And thank you, Louie. Looking forward to getting you back next week, but it's going to be good. Thank you, especially to our podcast listeners. And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Have a good day, everyone. Bye.